Sudan's warring parties have accused each other of violating a fragile ceasefire, which has now been extended for three more days. Hundreds of people have been killed in a violent power struggle between the army and the paramilitary Rapid Support Force. The UN is sending its chief of aid as an envoy to Sudan. Martin Griffiths says the humanitarian situation there is now reaching breaking point. Hiba Morgan reports from Khartoum.
Nigerian students run for cover in Khartoum. Like millions of others, they've been trapped in the city for more than 2 weeks. The United Nations is warning Sudan is falling apart as the army and the paramilitary group, the Rapid Support Forces, battle for control. There are shortages of food, water, fuel, and medicine. The Interior Ministry has deployed extra police officers in Khartoum to stop looting. But what people really want is a permanent ceasefire. So far, several foreign mediated truces have barely held. The announcement of a new three-day ceasefire hasn't generated much optimism among people here in Khartoum. Many say the ceasefire means little as they continue to witness daily fighting and remain cut off from many of their basic needs. These are soldiers near a bridge that connects Khartoum North to the city of Omdurman. Both are under heavy bombardment, as is the area around the presidential palace and army headquarters. Every day, thousands of people decide it's no longer safe to stay. This rescue ship in Port Sudan is taking evacuees to Saudi Arabia. Around 5,000 Syrians say they're being processed more slowly than other nationalities.
We've been here for 8 days. The evacuation of Syrians has stopped. The day before yesterday, only 27 people were evacuated. No Syrians were evacuated yesterday. We do not know what is happening, and no one gives us a clear answer.
In Ergin, on the Egypt-Sudan border, satellite images show queues of buses waiting to take people across. Others have flown home.
On the first 2 days of the war, there was action in Port Sudan with a couple of jets flying over and some bombs landing. But in Port Sudan itself, it was quiet. So obviously a lot of military action, but no fighting. But everyone's tense. But even the Sudanese people we work with wanted to go back to normal because they just want their country to grow and prosper.
Former Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok has added his voice to those calling for an end to the conflict, warning it could deteriorate into one of the worst civil wars in the world. Hiba Morgan, Al Jazeera, Khartoum.
Abdulrahman Babakar is a Sudanese physician who was stranded in Khartoum but managed to return to the United Kingdom. He explains the harrowing journey back.
You can hear the fire shot around you. You can see the airplane above you. You can see the smokes from the bombs and all things. It's really scary point to go to see if you can be evacuated or not. And then you will go through many checkpoints to be seen, which is sometimes a bit scary, especially if you are thinking that you will go through the Rapid Support Forces. Because sometimes they will threaten the people and they may harm them. So it's really difficult. I've been really treated well with the national military people, soldiers that they are checking in the way till the airport. 2 days before just I went there, there was a bomb in one of the medical center just 2 blocks from us. We heard that 14 people got injured in there. Two of them have amputation of their hands and many got bleeding, and then they brought to the nearby hospital in which there are no medical staff because no one can reach to the hospital. Also, there is no medical aid. So I'm really worried about them, especially my dad and mom. If they got ill at any time, how can they receive any support from the hospital, or even how can they reach the hospital to have some treatment? It's really worrying thingy. I made it, but they didn't made it. They are still in there. They don't know what to do exactly. So it's a bit of scary. It's not a bit of scary. It's really scary and it's really worrying, actually.
David Shin is the former deputy chief of mission at the U.S. Embassy in Sudan. He says there's no room for governments to pick sides in this conflict.
The vast majority of it is an internal issue. It really is a power struggle between the Sudan Armed Forces on the one hand and the Rapid Support Forces on the other. There is some external involvement historically because of financial support or just plain moral support for one side or the other. The degree to which that is happening today is unclear. I think that anyone on the outside who was supporting one side or the other before this broke out will want to rethink their policy on this, because all it would do at this point is to contribute to a continuation of the conflict. And almost all outside countries agree that is not in their interest. They can ensure that they don't provide any financial assistance to any of the contending parties. They can also look at ways to put financial pressure on the contending parties based on whatever foreign direct investment they have in the country or whatever other financial connections they might have, in order to try to get them to draw back from the ongoing fighting. And that applies to other countries too, not just the Gulf states, but many countries have a financial investment in Sudan today.
Evacuation flights from Sudan have started arriving in neighboring South Sudan's capital. Haruma Tassa met some of the evacuees in Juba who say they traveled for days before finding a flight home.
There are at least three flights like this every day, and they're being sponsored by local businessmen who say this service is free. People don't have to pay. All they have to do is make it from Sudan to South Sudan's border and then walk to an airstrip that's nearby. They're then flown here to Juba, South Sudan's capital. We asked some of them what the journey was like from Sudan, and they said that more people are still coming, and it's mainly women, the elderly, and children.
Civilians are really suffering. There are no foods, there are no water, people are dying. There is a certain lady who died because of diabetes. There are no medical care.
The bad thing I see in Khartoum, the fighting was break out within the city. Yeah, even children were being killed.
The international community is trying to resolve the conflict in Sudan. Here in South Sudan, politicians are trying to organize face-to-face meetings between representatives from the Sudanese army and the paramilitary RSF. But getting the two sides to sit down together may take time. Haruma Tassa, Al Jazeera, Juba.
148 Somalis have arrived in the capital, Mogadishu. The evacuees, mostly students, traveled from Sudan to Ethiopia by land and then took a flight home. The airlift was organized by Somalia's government and the International Organization for Migration. Many people in Sudan who had submitted travel documents to foreign embassies are still stranded. That's after several countries evacuated their diplomats. Rahila Mohammed reports.
Some Sudanese say they are trapped in Khartoum without their passports. Tens of thousands of people are fleeing to neighboring countries. Dozens of foreign governments have flown out their citizens and diplomatic staff. But for some Sudanese, leaving is not an option, as their travel documents are locked in shuttered embassies. Well, we spoke to Sudanese residents still stuck in the capital after failing to retrieve their passports.
By the end of March, I have applied for a study visa to South Africa. And by the date of 18th of April, after 3 days of war, starting most of diplomats and different embassies staff were evacuated. So I couldn't reach my passport, so I can't go anywhere. I didn't get any response from the embassy, no announcement, no phone calls, even no direct messages.
I applied for the Schengen visa at the Swedish embassy in Khartoum. I didn't get my passport back because the staff simply up and left with complete disregard to the situation. It's not just me, there are hundreds of us in different EU embassies. It's utterly irresponsible, and it's such a shame because they spent a lot of money on curbing the migration, the illegal migration, when they can't even come up with an e-visa system. So situations like this do not happen.
I emailed the Spanish embassy multiple times and I called them multiple times. But when they found out I was in Spanish, they hung up without any explanation. Me and my family were forced to leave our house in Khartoum as it was no longer safe. My family scattered. Me and my brother came to Port Sudan, but he got on the ferry to Jeddah. My mother and sister are currently in the Egyptian border trying to cross to Egypt. And I'm here not knowing what I will be doing next.
Well, as you can imagine, a lot of people are trying to figure out what's happening with their papers. Some are contacting governments on Twitter. The Dutch Foreign Ministry recently replied to a visa query confirming that a number of Sudanese passports had been left behind at the embassy. It advises people to apply for a new passport with local authorities. Another criticism of foreign governments is automated responses. Dozens of people are sharing their frustrations online as well. Now, some countries are trying to work around those changes on the ground. The Swiss embassy says it's working hard to find options for people to collect their passports. And the Chinese embassy says Sudanese residents can now collect their documents in Khartoum. Now, with so many people in limbo, you may be wondering, what are the legal implications? Sudan has signed a number of treaties, including the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. It states everyone lawfully within the territory of a state shall, within that territory, have the right to liberty of movement. And everyone shall be free to leave any country, including his own. Rights groups say governments can be held liable for not doing enough to return passports to visa applicants.